In October, that's next month, Ben Saunders and Taka Lepinier are attempting an unsupported 1,800-mile round trip to the South Pole. It will retrace the path that Captain Scott took in 1911-1912. That expedition wasn't successful. Five people lost their lives. Through a fortunate set of events, that's the IFA conference here in Berlin, I'm very pleased to be able to sit down with Ben Saunders, the lead for the expedition here. Taka's not here today, but Ben is going to spend a few minutes with us. And, well, first of all, welcome, Ben. Welcome
Thank
to IFA. Welcome to
pleasure.
Germany. You just flew in this morning,
right? Flew this morning, yes. In fact, yes, it's great to be here.
So you haven't even had time to have a famous cookie burst?
Not yet. No. I'm looking forward. I am actually fattening up for Antarctica,
so I
ought to do that.
So cookie burst is the tip here for Germany. But the reason we're talking to you today is not to really focus on the expedition itself, but because the listeners here are technically minded, it's Ultrabook News is the place this will go out. We want to talk about the technology you're using on the tour, on the expedition, because Intel are sponsoring it, and they've given you a couple of Ultrabooks to take out for 4 months where there's no mains power, right? So there's 4 months walking and camping down to minus 40 degrees. We're familiar with Ultrabooks. We know they're super efficient. We've even done some solar testing before. We know it's technically possible, but 4 months? Can you tell us how exactly you're gonna do that?
I can try. Yeah, one of the things that we've been working on for years and years, since my first expedition was in 2001, we had, in fact, no satellite phones on that first trip. So we were using HF radio, which is almost World War I technology. So we had pretty much zero communication with the outside world. And ever since then, we've been working on this challenge of how we not only communicate, but how we share these stories with as big an audience as possible. And the internet is the perfect medium for sharing them. You can not only tell the story, but interact with the audience. And we thought, therefore, we need some sort of technology. And up until very recently, any form of laptop was just too heavy, too power hungry, and didn't have the processing power to edit photos, video, from our tent. So it's only really now with the latest Ultrabooks, clicks with the fourth gen processors, that we can edit high definition video, we can edit photographs in real time, and send them all back via satellite phone to the website. So we'll have two Ultrabooks with us. They are pretty much the smallest we could find. They're less than 900 grams each.
These are Sony.
They're BioPro. Yes, so 11-inch BioPros. Touchscreen. They've got about a 9-hour battery life. They're, despite being very, very small and very light, they're also pretty tough. They've got carbon fiber cases. Intel have been testing them in Swindon down to minus 40 over many, many. How long have you? Was it 70 days of the original? About 10, yeah. They're still going.
Oh, they're still being tested.
So
they come out a day before the tour, do they?
So when we originally said to Intel's engineers, this is what we're doing, we're going to be in Antarctica, the coldest, windiest, driest, highest altitude place on Earth, one of the most extreme environments on the planet, and we want to take two Ultrabooks with us. They kind of all went, we're not sure they're going to work. So Intel have been testing them repeatedly down to minus 40, cycling through those temperatures, warming them back up again, running loads of tests, freezing them again overnight. So we're confident that the technology works. The Ultrabooks are unmodified. They're essentially off the shelf, same as you can buy online or on the high street. We are, as you said, we're powering everything using solar power. We have 24-hour daylight. We're skiing through the Antarctic summer. Summer is probably a misleading term. The average temperature will be in the minus 30s.
And the sun is not high in the sky either.
It'll get higher as we're out there and as we get closer to the pole. But it obviously does a sort of arc throughout the day. But we will have 24-hour daylight. And even in the 9 or 10 years now I've been doing stuff with photovoltaic panels, the efficiency has just gone through the roof. They just work extraordinarily well.
Yeah.
The panels themselves are more efficient in the cold. I'm not quite sure why.
I've read that. Yes. The most efficient measurements they've had on a solar panel has been at the North Pole.
Yes.
Yeah. Same thing.
So the panels work well. They are two. We're actually taking two with us now.
I'm glad to hear you're taking two.
Firstly, for a bit of redundancy, and just in case one of the breaks. And secondly, so we've if we need to, we can max out on just powering all the tech gear. So we're taking two 62 watt panels. They're folding panels. I don't actually know what the dimensions are, but they obviously fold out. They'll go over one of the sledges during the day or over the tent at night. And then we're taking probably three or four lithium polymer battery packs, that also have so they regulate the charge from the panel. And then we power all of the tech gear, so not only the ultrabooks, but recharging cameras, MP3 players, e-readers, GPS units, all the power for the tech stuff, sat data stuff. Yes, everything comes from these battery packs.
How much? Talking about the satellite data side of things, how much data are you going to get through this?
We're still waiting to see, actually. We're still running the final tests. We are doing, and this is a world first, we're looking at using a modified version of something called an Iridium Pilot, which is, Iridium is the only satellite network that works. Pilot is designed normally for ships. Someone a couple of years ago modified one to work on aeroplanes, called Pilot Aero. And we thought, well, if they can do that, if they can make it a little bit lighter and then a little bit more, you know, and if you can sit outside a plane, then it's fine in the wind, it's fine at minus 60 probably. So can we just make it a little bit lighter again? So that's what we're looking at doing. It's still being tested, so I can't give you the exact figures yet, but we're really confident that we'll have, for Antarctica, a whole new level of bandwidth. So that means that using the ultrabooks, we can send back not only high res images, but also decent quality video. So perhaps not full on high def, but it'll be
any
nice
sort of interactive stuff planned. Some Skype sessions.
A lot of it depends on exactly what sort of bandwidth figures we get. Weirdly, in Antarctica, we have very clear sky. Once we get away from the mountains, we pass up and down the transantarctic mountains. But once we're up on the plateau itself, it's essentially like a big white desert. So there are no trees, there are no mountains, there are no buildings, there's nothing to...
Be careful, you're making it sound easy.
So there is nothing. So you've got a very clear, big clear sky, clear horizon. So the normal Iridium handset works extraordinarily well and actually tends to work really badly in built-up areas where there are other signals and buildings and that sort of stuff. So we're not sure on the exact bandwidth yet, but if it works as we hope it's going to, then there could be some really exciting levels of interactivity. So potentially, Google Hangouts, we might do something with Skype. It'll be daily, whatever happens, it'll be a daily blog. And obviously updating things like Twitter and Instagram and Google+.
That brings me to a question. How much of the expedition is going to be spent doing all this stuff? I mean, presumably your focus is getting there and back.
Yeah.
And this kind of gets in the way of that part of the project, right? How many hours a day would you spend sitting in the tent working on blogs, your journals, your messaging and stuff like that?
I think it'll probably be about an hour a day. And it's actually more efficient than it sounds. There are two of us, Tarka and me, obviously. And essentially what we'll do in the evenings, once we've got the tent up, you have a hot drink, a bit of food, and then one person will start preparing the sort of evening meal, which takes a little while, but it sounds more exotic than it is. It's basically, it's freeze-dried in a bag and you're melting snow on a stove to rehydrate it. But one person will be doing that, and then the other person's freed up to edit photographs, compose today's blog post. And you have a lot, just from past experience, you have a lot of time during the day to think, well, what should I write about today? What are the themes? Right. And also, because of the degree of interactivity, there may well be questions from the day before or a few days before that we'll try and answer that day. Yeah. So I think it'll take about an hour to compose a blog post, perhaps decide if we're doing a podcast that day, or we're doing a video, or we're doing it, and then perhaps edit it all together, send it back. So it'll be about an hour in the evenings.
Right.
And I certainly I did a very big solo expedition in 2004, which was to the North Pole, and I was on my own for 70 years.
Solo, you're the first solo.
That was the third.
Sorry, but
no one's done it since. I was the youngest. So that was a while ago. 2004, obviously pre Facebook, pre Twitter, pre social media, but I was blogging for that trip, and we had a huge audience, and the blog actually became, rather than becoming a chore, it became something that, I think because I was on my own as well, it became a way, it was almost like my diary. I didn't quite realize how big the audience was, and I also realized that people didn't really have any reference points. If I said, well, it's minus 48, well, no one knows what it feels like. Or the sledge is 160 kilos, well, no one knows. So actually, they were far more interested in the sort of human experience of it and what was the highs and lows mentally and what I was feeling emotionally. So I think that's what we'll try and write about. And I think the more, from past experience, the more honest we are, the more open we are, the more it engages people. So I'm looking forward to it, though.
Yeah, it'll be great. One thing I wanted to talk about As bloggers, we go around IFA, we have all our kit. In fact, we do a similar thing to you. We get up early in the morning, we scavenge for food, we walk a long way.
I've walked a long sometimes way today already.
Sometimes carrying, you know, 5 kilos on our back. But we lose stuff, or stuff gets stolen. Now, you won't get stuff stolen, but you might lose stuff and stuff might break. What happens? What's the sort of redundancy plan when things break?
Yeah, well, for the really critical gear, we often have two sets. So we'll have two sets of skis each. So we have a spare. They've actually, the skis have fabric on the bottom to grip the snow called skin. So they've got slightly different setups. So for anything that's really critical, there tends to be backup. So we'll have two ultrabooks. We'll have two Iridium handsets, so two phones. We're only got one on the pilot system because it's big and heavy, but everything else is sort of backed up. So for most of the things, there's redundancy built into it. It is an extraordinary extreme environment, but we're actually only using the ultrabooks in the evening in the tent when it's obviously very sheltered, we're out of the wind, out of the elements, and it's relatively warm, especially if the sun's out and it's shining, you've got the cooker going. It's not as unpleasant as it sounds. So it's certainly not like we're going to be whipping them out in the middle of a storm, you know, getting snow in the people.
Yeah.
We tend to be quite cautious and really try and look after all the kit, sort of nurse it through, because it's such a tough experience.
That's something, you know, we have to do as well, look after our kit. But would you have any tips for, you know, people doing off-the-grid computing, as it were? How to save battery life, how to be efficient, what to think about? Any tips?
Yeah, I think for us, we're trying, I mean, the fourth-gen processor has meant such a huge step up anyway in terms of the battery life and the efficiency. So we're getting, at the moment, 9 hours out of the device that we're testing, which is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
But even then, I think we just try and turn everything off. So things like, obviously, if you're in the middle of nowhere, things like Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, you're probably going to be using, you can, you know, try and find the most efficient power settings, and obviously make sure things like apps you're not using are closed down.
We've
certainly gone through a process of trying to strip down stuff that we're not going to be using out there in terms of apps to free up as much memory space as possible for video and photographs. So I think that's part of it.
I saw on one of your videos that you'd stripped out so much of the OS, you didn't have any games left. Yeah. Tell us about Tarka's chessboard.
Yeah, we were stuck in our tent for 48 hours, which is the kind of thing that happens quite a lot if the weather's very bad. We'll have very high winds in Antarctica. And we had two tough books that we were testing in Greenland earlier this year. They worked brilliantly, but we totally stripped them down because we were worried about apps. We obviously didn't have the pilot set up, so we were using a standard Iridium handset, which has just got tiny bandwidth. Simon, can you remember the figures we were getting from the Iridium handset, the bandwidth?
The official figure is
3.4 kilobits per second.
Just to relay that, 3.4 kilobits per second.
And that's the official figure. We were probably getting about a quarter of that. It was just so slow. So we were worried that there might be apps that were looking for updates or were, you know, just trying to use the bandwidth that we had that was so tiny. So we basically stripped everything off, all the games, everything had gone. And we're sat there in the tent for 48 hours, nothing really to do. And thinking, I wish we had a game to play. We had one movie, we had Inception. We watched that twice, got fed up with that. So we're like, we need something else to do. So Tarka, in some inspired moment, decided we still had Microsoft Paint, so Tarka drew a chessboard in Paint, saved it as the wallpaper on one of the tough books, and created sort of copy and pasting icons on the desktop, created an entire chess set. And also it's touch screen, so we could drag the pieces around. The pawns were the Internet Explorer piece.
There's a video of it. So if you're listening, what video is it on? I can't remember now.
It's on one of the YouTube videos.
Yeah, it's great. It's at the end of the video. Watch it. Tarka set up the desktop as a chess board and all these icons with different names like Pawn 1, Black. Fantastic. Brilliant. Listen, we're going to sign off. So tell us when you're going, how we can follow you, and most importantly, when will I be able to speak to you again?
Aha. Well, we are leaving in a few weeks' time. We will start skiing, if the weather's good and we don't have any delays on the way down to Antarctica, we will start skiing the very last week of October, so not long at all. You can follow along. Everything is Scott. Obviously, it's called the Scott Expedition. It's scottexpedition.com. Everything, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram is all Scott Expedition, so we're highly Googleable. So you'll be able to follow along lots of social media, and who knows, we may be able to do something from the expedition. We shall see. I'd love that.
If you
follow up, and you can see how
if you
working.
Get a chance to write something for Ultrabook News, we'll be more than happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, thanks again, Ben Saunders from the Scott Expedition, and good luck.
Pleasure. Thank you.